been thinking about speaking, and I thought I'd have more time. You know, I need at least 5 days to get everything out. But, you know, you people are the future of AA, and I'm really glad to see you all here. You know, where should I begin? I asked Glenn, you know, I knew I shouldn't have worn this coat tonight because he snuck up and asked me like 5 minutes ago. See, he could have taken you, but anyway, I don't have a whole lot of jokes. I was born in Muncie, Indiana. And as they say, there's a lot of smart people that come from Indiana. And the smarter they are, the faster they come from it. And that's not my own personal joke. I have one that I made up personally. Yeah, but most of you people probably have never heard. Have you heard of Jeffrey Dahmer? Oh, you have. Okay, well, you might appreciate this joke then. I heard on the radio, was walking to the courthouse, that he had died. You know, somebody killed him in the bathroom. Don't know what he was doing in there, but I could guess. And I was going through the, I know some people are slower than others. I was going through the sheriff's little thing there at the courthouse, you know, and I said to the sheriff there, "Did you hear Jeffrey Dahmer died?" And he said, "No, no." He said, "Yeah, he bit off more than he could chew." And that's my one joke that I made up that I could remember. And I thought about, I asked Glenn and some of the people in Predator's Row back there whether I could tell this one part of my story that when I was 4 years old and my sexual experience. He said, no, that's for another time and another place, and this is not it. So I was a little different than, you know, I was thinking back on my life, and I was a little different than most of you people because, you know, I didn't think there was something wrong with me. I thought there was something wrong with everybody else, you know. And then I thought about, you know, what I had done growing up. And I, you know, I got kicked out of the Cub Scouts for fighting, you know, and I got fired from my first paper route, you know, and I've never had a job working for somebody else longer than 3 years, you know. And I know Lou was telling me he's worked for somebody for 25 years, and I went, oh my God, you know, it's a lifetime. But anyway, I didn't start drinking or smoking or using anything until I was like about 18. I mean, I had some one sip of this or that, you know, a few times. But when I was 18, I was working at a grocery store, and I was in college, and I didn't do it personally, but one of my compadres would steal a case of beer, and then we'd drive to Ohio, you know, where you could drink in clubs and things, because you could drink at that time when you're 18. And that's when I started my drinking career, I guess you call it now. And then I'm in college, I drank. And, you know, when I was in college, this is a long time ago, in Indiana, which, you know, it's always several years behind the rest of the world, they did not have drugs, you know. The one fat guy in a fraternity, his dad had got him a large bottle of Black Beauties, and that's the only, you know, any drugs I ever knew about, you know. And I did hear something that one of the famous people in town had got some marijuana, but, you know, never showed up any place that I could find. So, you know, I got out of college. Somehow I graduated, and, you know, I got a job teaching in a little town in Knightstown, Indiana. And it was a farm town, had one light, a blinking red light. And I taught typing. And so one day the librarian brought down these sentences with all the letters in the alphabet in them and said, maybe you could use this in your class. And I looked at them and I said, oh, sure, yeah. And I made copies and passed them out. And I was, after I did that, I was called into the superintendent's office because they, you know, were, one sentence was, pack my box with 12 dozen liquor jugs. Now, it had all the, you know, had all the letters in it, but, you know, they were strict teetotalers in that town. And the other one was, sexy zebras vie for quick, hot matings. And, you know, that was also not good for a country high school. So they wanted to fire me at the half semester, but since they didn't have anybody else, you know, I got to work the whole year, and then they fired me. And they never fired me; they just didn't hire me back. So I bought a new car and went to California. And one thing that happened is the kid that was the librarian's kid, you know, was in my typing class and he failed. You know, I think he deserved to fail, even though I smiled and grinned. And they called me right the night before I went to California and tried to get me to change his grade because he couldn't play baseball that year. And then they threatened me, "You'll never teach in Indiana again." And I said, "Yay, raw. Don't ever want to do that." So I went to California and, you know, and then I got into, I think the first time I heard about drugs was one of the financial magazines. They had found a drug that could change you and change the way you think, and it was legal. It was lysergic acid dithalamine, and that's LSD for short. And I was going with a redheaded nurse at the time, and I said, "Man, could you, you know, if I get some of that, could you watch over me and make sure I don't, you know, do anything ugly?" And she said, "No, don't ever do that, you idiot." So so I didn't then. And later on, you know, I got into that kind of stuff. And eventually, you know, I could tell you a lot about a drug story, but they didn't give me enough time to talk about it. I'll just tell you a couple things. After I got into AA and got sober, I went in this town back in the ancient days of the 80s. Oh, I didn't tell you my sobriety date. You're required to do that here, right, Lauren? I thought you were the boss. Yeah, okay. See, she said do it. It's July 1st, 1983. And the reason it's July 1st is because I couldn't remember what day I got sober. And I asked my sponsor, I said, "Well, you know, I don't remember what day it is." He said, "Well, just use mine, you know, it's July 1st. I said, "Hey, you know, and you do what your sponsor says, right? Most of the time." And I went to get a job at Shepherd Dental Center. I don't think they're around anymore, but, and I got here, it was a depression or a recession or whatever, and so I really needed that job, and I went to a meeting, a Monday night men's meeting, and I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to have to tell them the truth." And so, you know, if you ask somebody in a meeting, you know, you'll get a lot of different answers, and you can usually pick the one that you agree with. But too many of them said, "Be honest." So that's what I did, you know, and I filled out the form, and it was a lie detector test, which they can't give everybody anymore. And I put down, you know, I took all these drugs, and I was arrested, and I was a felon, blah, blah, blah. And I took the test, and I took the test, and he looked at the form, and he said, "Well, you don't have marijuana on here." And I said, "Well, there wasn't enough room to put it. You know, I had so many other things." And anyway, the only thing I failed on the test was I didn't have transportation to work. So, you know, I mean, that was crazy. I had two cars, and I could walk to work. And in fact, when one of them didn't fail, I had to walk home one night. So what AA has given me is getting through all the horrible, shitty things that... All the horrible, shitty things that happened to me in my life while I was sober. See, I made an amends. Isn't that enough? And I talking about amends, I have to tell you this because it was kind of funny. I got into a low argument out in front of Yana a couple weeks or maybe a month ago. Somebody's already heard this, I know, but I'm going to bore you again with it. And with a woman, of course. You don't argue with men in this program. And And it turned into a yelling match. And I thought, well, you know, and she walked away and angry. And I went on, I got home, and her car was parked in front of my house. And I went, oh, shit, I hope she didn't bring her gun, you know. And so she was walking away that she had put a check that she owed me, more than that, really. But I gave her the AA discount. And I said, well, I need to make an amends. And she said, I don't want to talk to you. So hey, you know, when you make an amends, you never know what's going to happen, you know. Anyway, that was an aside. And my parents lived long enough for me to make an amends. And both of them died, and my second wife at the time left and took part of most of the inheritance. And I did not drink, you know, and that, it was a miracle. I did start smoking again, but, you know. And then later on, I got a call from Glen Bay, that, you know, it might have been the crisis center that my daughter had been taken to foster care because my wife accused me of some horrible things, and nothing was true. But I mean, you know, this was in the age of when everybody was being accused of terrible things with their children, and it took 3 years of fighting that in court, you know, with Pencil Neck Geek and the attorney for HRS. They, you know, they were so bad they had to change their name. You know, HRS changed the families and children. But anyway, I didn't drink through those 3 years, and I did have a wonderful woman that was in Black Belt Al-Anon that was with me and stayed with me until she died. But anyway, I went through that, and the judge said guilty, even though we have no evidence or anything, because they can do that. You know, you get in court with that kind of thing, you can be guilty without, you know. I mean, you don't go to you don't go to jail or anything. You just, you know, you have that thing on your forehead. And so I kept fighting, and I appealed it. Of course, I lost. Then at the very end, I got a different judge, and he ordered us to, you know, reunite and everything. Not my ex-wife, thank God, but the kids. My ex-wife kicked the kids out of the car out in the country and drove home and took the phone off the hook. And well, she was diagnosed with bipolar with psychotic episodes. And anyway, 30 seconds, I'm under pressure here. I went to the same judge to the final thing with the same judge that said I was guilty, and basically she gave me the full custody and child support. And, you know, I didn't drink. And, you know, that's just some of the things that AA has given me, the ability to not drink in crucial situations, you know. And you can do it too, you know. Just keep coming back. And you know, one thing you got to do is you got to surrender to win. Thank you.
At this time, we will be passing the baskets in accordance with our seventh tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And now Gene will give out the chips.
Hey, hello. My name is Gene. I'm an alcoholic. Here at the Tampa Bay Young People Group, we celebrate milestones of sobriety. And the first one is the white chips. For those who are new or coming back, for those who are sick and tired of it, for those who want to join our new way of life. That was Gio. White white chip, newer coming back. One month. 2 months. This was Brittany with 2 months. 2 months. 3 months. That was Mike with 3 months and Chad with 3 months. 3 months? 6 months? 9 months? That was Cheryl with 9 months. Morgan with 9 months.